Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Welcome back to another episode of the eLaborate Topics podcast. I am your host for today, Stephanie Whitehead. If you haven't listened to our podcast before, I am your podcasting laboratory leader and co-host for this show. For those of you tuning in for the first time, the eLaborate Topics podcast is a weekly podcast where myself or my co-host, Tywana Wilson and or Lona Small, are bringing you topics related to the laboratory and leadership to help you excel inside and outside of the laboratory. And today we have another exciting show for you, so let's get straight into it. Today I am joined by special guest Marcy Trevino.
Hello. Oh, it's Dufresne now. Yes.
It is Dufresne. You know what? Me and Marcy go way back. Marcy used to work for me as a new technologist in one of my first laboratory director positions. And at that point, you were not married and you did not have children and your last name was Trevino.
Yes, that's correct. So gosh, it's been so many years, but yes, we go way back and I'm just really happy that we were able to reconnect because you were my first boss. I was a brand new baby tech when I started at Christus Santa Rosa. And I just think it was such a good start to my profession. I think it really made me feel like this was a possible like career for, because at the time I was planning on becoming an English teacher, but then I kind of just loved the lab world. And I think that a big part of it was you had a good setup. So I had a good foundation as a baby lab tech.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, tell the listeners, this is us just reconnecting on a podcast, but tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, your laboratory journey, how you got to where you are today. Like we mentioned, me and you go way back. So don't forget that part of your journey, but tell us a little bit about your road through the laboratory profession.
Yeah. So it was kind of an unexpected thing. I was attending University of Texas in San Antonio, and I was pursuing an English degree. Now I was having, you know, a little trouble paying for college, so I decided maybe I would go my sister's route. She joined the Air Force, and she was paying for college that way. And so I ended up joining the Texas Air National Guard. And so when I went into the recruiter's office, they do it a little differently for Air National Guard people. They have set positions that are open at their unit, and they kind of tell you, this is what you qualify for, which one do you want to pick? And so I remember that I was given two options. I was given a logistics, I think it was called medical logistics position, and the other one was medical laboratory technician position, which I had never heard of until that time. And I was like, well, I know what logistics is. I don't really want to be dealing with, you know, like shipping and materials. I wanted something that I could kind of use in the civilian side. So I was like, well, medical laboratory technician, is that something I could use? And he's like, absolutely. You know, our techs, they work, you know, mostly full-time civilian at hospitals. And I was like, I'll do that. And I literally had no idea what it entailed. And I went home and I was just like Googling medical laboratory technician. And then I saw, because I think most people have the preconceived idea that it's typically lab is just like phlebotomy. So it's like, well, drawing blood. I was like, that, you know, that could be helpful. But then I saw that it just had so many different areas of study, like coagulation, like just everything that I know now, but it was just foreign subjects to me. And so that was kind of the beginning of it. I went off to training, and military training is very sped up MLT school. So we wake up in the morning, we march to school, we attend classes all day, we march back, we study, and then we would do a quiz the next day on the previous day's material. And we did that for 9 months straight. So it's very sped up. It's kind of like a lab boarding school, if you think about it that way. And after that, we do clinical rotations at major hospitals throughout the United States. And I was sent to Wilfrid Hall Medical Center in, I believe it was the trauma center at that time. So I got really good experience at that hospital when I did my rotations. And as I progressed through the courses, I just kind of fell more and more in love with just the science and just the vast array of different things that I was learning about, just the human body and every, it was just very interesting to me. So I started to kind of, I kind of like sat on this. I love literature and I love English, and this is like my comfort zone. And then there's this whole new science world. And it just kind of, I just went along with it. I started applying for jobs right out of, which was kind of difficult without it. I didn't have a certification and I didn't have any experience, but I was determined. And so I remember going in person to hospitals to get a job. And that's kind of how I got the job at Christus Santa Rosa. I know that I had a application prepared and I gave it to, I think, Joe Polis was the name of my supervisor that got it. And I got a call back from him and I was thrilled. And the rest is history. And I've kind of just followed along the same path. I've worked at lots of different hospitals around the country because we are a military family. My husband is active duty still. And so that has given me a unique opportunity to travel and to see different labs and different types of work cultures. And it's just been a very fulfilling, and it still is ever changing. Like my idea of like where I want to go in the lab career field, even now with the job that I have, which right now I recently was hired at Canventa Life Sciences, which is in the Oakland area. You can see the bay, like you can actually see the Golden Gate Bridge when I drive to work. It's really pretty.
Oh, that's
But
cool.
I live, yeah, it's so beautiful. So now I'm kind of in a new branch off of the lab field, which I never, I mean, who would have thought? I walked into a recruiter's office, never heard of the career field, and here I am in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm working for stem cell isolation laboratory, which is, it's fascinating stuff. I love it. So that's a little background, or a lot of background.
So when you think about your journey, and starting out in a military, kind of atmosphere, and even, like you said, you're a military wife now, and so you're still kind of in the atmosphere. What has been your favorite part of your laboratory journey, or even if it's been the military versus the civilian, I can't even talk, the civilian route, what has been either your favorite area or your favorite location or your favorite part of being in the laboratory profession?
So do you mean like laboratory setting versus like civilian laboratory setting, maybe like kind of comparing the two?
Well, I guess when you look back over your career, what is your favorite aspect of it?
I think my favorite aspect was that we are a military family and I don't mind traveling. I love, I know some people might have issues with starting and, having to leave jobs and restarting jobs. But to me, it was exciting because there was always something new to learn, always new minds to kind of be around and like get fresh perspectives about like, new technologies, new ways of running systems, and even new science is coming in. Like right now at the stem cell isolation at Canventa Life Sciences, it's stuff that is kind of still fresh and new and ever changing. So I think that my favorite part, if I had to say it, was that I was able to move around the country with, my husband's moves and just be exposed to so many different kinds of facilities. I think that's my favorite part. Now I'm kind of ready to grow roots. We're both ready to grow roots, but it's been a fun thing to travel with the military and kind of see the country and like the different laboratory and facilities, the different type of facilities too, because they weren't all hospitals. Some of them are little satellite labs. So
So
yeah.
we'll definitely get into that. And so I don't know if you knew this about me, but my dad, I don't know if we ever talked about this, but my dad was actually in the Army for 22 years too. So I'm a
Oh
military
my
kid
gosh.
also.
I did not know that. Yeah,
I
that's
know.
awesome.
And he
And
retired.
military brat.
I'm a well, I'm not necessarily a brat, but I am a
No.
Marine. But we'll definitely get into all of those aspects because we want people to know that there are quote unquote traditional or conventional routes of getting into the laboratory medicine profession, but there are also untraditional or unconventional routes. And that's what we're going to be diving deep into with Marcy today. So today she and I will be discussing her non-traditional career path in the laboratory field and becoming an MLT from working in the military, the US Army, to several civilian laboratory environments. And also, Marcy is a first generation college graduate student. She's also a military wife and mother, and we've already touched on that a little bit. So I really want to touch on how all of those aspects of your life have helped your growth in your MLT profession. So one of the things that makes your path so interesting is that in your family, like I said, you're a first generation college graduate. So tell me about what made you want to take that educational route. And you touched on it a little bit before, talking about with your sister. And Marcy is a twin, by the way.
Yes,
She's a twin. She looks just like her sister. I guess that's exactly what twin means, but
yeah, there's fraternal and identical, so sometimes they don't look alike, but
when
yes.
I met Marcy, I literally acted like I met my first set of twins. I was like, "Oh my God, you guys look exactly alike."
I didn't know you met my sister. I
I
don't
did it.
remember that.
You showed me several pictures of her.
Oh, okay. Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Yeah, she's great.
So tell me about what made you go the educational route, even though you didn't have necessarily a college graduate example in your family.
Yeah, so I actually remember the very first time I set foot on a university campus, and it was in sixth grade. So they had this program in my elementary school, because sixth grade, it went up to sixth grade in my in Floresville, Texas. So they had this special field trip. It was only for girls, and it was to the University of Texas in San Antonio. And I remember thinking, I just want to, skip out on school that day. So I was like, I'll go on a field trip. That sounds like fun. And I remember going, and I was just awestruck by the energy and just seeing like these young people kind of like, pursuing their dreams. And I never even considered that for myself because, and I'm so glad they do programs like this because it is literally the catapult for me when I decided I wanted someday to get my degree. And I remember we went into a laboratory, and I was talking to my husband about this the other day. They actually had a laboratory, and nobody was in it, but they had microscopes like all around, and they just let us kind of like sit and listen to like a little speech. I don't even remember what the speech was about, but I just remember thinking like, wow, like look at this classroom. Like they have like these expensive looking microscopes, and like it's the real deal. And I wanted to be a part of it. I wanted to be a part of academia so badly after that. And so I had all these ideas, and I didn't tell my parents because I just wasn't sure like how they would. I didn't know if they would be able to like help me or guide me, and I just wasn't sure if I would even be able to obtain like any kind of higher education. But once I was a junior, I started applying to universities. The only one I wanted really badly, which was silly because their acceptance rates was like, it was decent, was UTSA. And when I got the acceptance letter, I was like, I was crying. I was so happy. I was like, I did it, and I did it on my own. I had to get some help from my counselor, but my parents didn't know I was doing that. And so my father had a very interesting reaction. He wasn't happy. And yeah, and the more I talk to people that come from my background, first generation Hispanic families, I think that it comes from a sense of like the unknown. Like they can't go there with me because they never went there with me. And maybe like it scared him, but I had pushback from my father. He was a little upset that I applied for college. And it was a really, I was very disappointed. I was a little heartbroken, but I still did it. I was so happy when the first day of college rolled around. And he wanted me to join the military. That was his job. Like, his dream was me going active duty. And I didn't want to tell him, but I was afraid to go because it was post 9/11 at this point. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to get sent to Afghanistan or Iraq. I didn't want to go to the Middle East. I didn't want to be in war. So my twin sister went to the military, but I was like, I don't think that's for me, not fully. So I did eventually join the Air National Guard, but it's because I knew that I could have the, you know, a little bit of the military world, but you serve the governor of Texas when you join the Air National Guard. So, you know, for home side natural disasters. So that's kind of how I went on a tangent, but yes, that really field trip. Yeah, that field trip that we took in sixth grade. And so those programs, they work because it planted that seed, that like desire to pursue higher education. And it's never gone away. Like I still want to go off and, you know, go into a MT program. So, yep.
And so have you ever thought about paying that forward? Like, you know, as I know that there are different programs with like ASCP, quick plug for the Career Ambassador program, if you're a career ambassador out there, but have you ever thought about going to different high schools or et cetera, as your kids get older and they give you more free time, perhaps?
Yes. Actually, it's funny you said that. I kind of was wondering when the career day thing would start because I want to talk to the kids about it and I want to kind of tell them that you can have your passions and then still pursue a different it's not black or white.
Great. That was really interesting. So you've worked in so many different laboratory settings across the country. Having done that, this is what I'm really interested in knowing because there are some common themes across laboratories that different laboratory professionals experience, even though they've never worked in the same laboratory and they've never met each other. So I'm interested from your perspective, having worked in, you know, military, like we said, civilian and laboratories all across the country. What are some common themes that you've seen or experienced in each lab that you've worked in?
So the common experience that I've had across the board, and I've worked in Alabama, Florida, Arizona, Texas, worked in several states, is that laboratory people are intelligent people. They are inquisitive. They are curious. They like to investigate. That's been my experience. So if something, you know, particular happens, we were like, oh, I wonder, it perks our interest. It's filled with people that genuinely enjoy the science. And since it's always changing, I think it's always interesting. Especially when you're doing like process improvements, that also entails kind of like understanding the science behind things. And I don't know, I've always been around people that were very intelligent and inquisitive. And I love those kind of people. And I guess, what else have I noticed?
Well, from your perspective, is there a difference between, you know, either the environment or the working structure, working military versus civilian?
I will say that the military facilities are much closer knit in a different way. And that's because they're experiencing something very different than the civilian labs. And the civilian labs kind of do day to day, you know, going on vacation, you know, I'm doing this. While the military hospitals have people that are constantly uprooted. So when you find yourself, it really does. I know that some people might not like this idea, but like in the military, it's very true. Your work family is like your family because mm-hmm. your family is typically states away. And when you have your spouse deployed for several months, they become your support group. And so there's definitely a different feeling of camaraderie, of connection in those families because it's out of necessity. You have to rely on these people.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Yes. So it's definitely different. Definitely, definitely different.
So what has been your favorite role to date and why? And then what has been your least favorite role to date and why?
I have a couple of favorites.
It's probably when it was your boss, I'm sure.
I know. I don't want to sound like I'm trying to like fluff you up, but like my first job was such a great experience, and it made me want to continue my career in lab, because I was, you know, kind of thinking about leaving off to college full time, but I just enjoyed it so much. And I think a lot of it had to do with, and I will say this, leadership is so important. It is so, so important to a lab, because when you have a leader that kind of doesn't know how to manage people's temperaments, I guess, mm-hmm. it really affects the morale. It really does. So definitely Christian Santa Rosa, because it was a beautiful facility. I still remember you were touring me around, and I was like, I can't believe I get to work here. And I saw like the little chandelier, like in the set, you know, at the entrance they had. I was like, everything was all shiny, and I think it was only like 2 or 3 years old at that time. And it was so beautiful. They had like a little garden area, so I loved my first job. It just kind of set my standard from then on for all the other labs.
Well, you know, and what, that is true. And I'm glad you said that, because part of the reason we started this podcast is because myself and my co-host really do feel like there are times in our profession where we, you know, promote the best tech, and don't we do the laboratory a service by giving them a really smart, good technical person to lead. But sometimes we do them a disservice if we don't arm them with the right, like, soft skills to lead people and to manage people and to build teams, et cetera. And so thank you for saying that, because what you did was just validate that it's important to have a person who's knowledgeable about compliance and regulatory and cap and validating machines and doing schedules and all of that. Yes. But it's also important to have a person who understands how to manage conflict and how to build morale and how to, you know, identify, you know, situations that where people may not be working well together and help them navigate that. Because without that, then your lab doesn't succeed either.
Yeah. And I want to kind of keep talking about that, because I want you to know, like, I remember, and I think we spoke briefly about this over email, that when I was having conflict and I didn't want to confront it, you handed me a book on conflict resolution. I don't know what the name of it was, but you just like gave me a chapter to read.
It's probably Crucial Conversations or something.
It was something, but I remember that I did read it, and you told me that you felt that this is something I had to do and it would benefit me from here on out. And you were correct, because I remember I was terrified. And I told my coworker, you know, this is how I feel when you like roll your eyes at me, because that's what she was doing. And it was just making me feel so like anxious, where I didn't even want to come to work. I was like, oh, she doesn't like me. I don't want, like, I'm afraid. And I remember you telling me I need to like just address it. And so I did. And then it did not go well initially. She was not happy that I, you know, I don't want to say called her out, but that I addressed it. And then I went to the bathroom and I cried, because it was just, I don't like confrontation. I don't like conflict, but I did it. And when I came back from the bathroom, I composed myself. She approached me and she was like, I'm sorry. She was like, I'm just kind of, not having, you know, such a great time lately, and I'm really sorry. And I'll, you know, she apologized, and it was just amazing to me. And I was like, wow, it like actually worked. And even though it was like terrifying, it actually stopped the relationship from being toxic. And we got along after that. From then on out, I think I worked there for 4 years, never had any issues with her after that. And so I've forever carried that, to address the problems, to not be afraid of it, and that it doesn't have to be a negative experience. So thank you. And it works.
Well, no problem. You know, the difficult thing about helping people understand is that difficult conversations are exactly that. So they're difficult, right? They call them, you know, confrontations for a reason. Yes. So they're not easy conversations to have. And they only become easier when you have several of them. So you're going to be terrified the first few times, because there's an element of the unknown. You're not exactly confident in your ability to respond to whatever the person will come back with. But the more conversations you have like that, the more situations you put yourself in, the easier they become. And then also, you know, if you had not confronted that person, I know exactly the situation you're talking about. your continued growth in working with that person would have been stifled. You know, there are so many times in the laboratory where people have conflict, and then we make all these accommodations for the conflict. Oh, we just won't put you two on the same shift, or we just won't put you
Yes.
two in the same section, or you know, this person will, you know, come in a little bit earlier so they can avoid this person, you know, and we make all these accommodations for behavior and just, you know, team conflict when we can just address it. To me, it's always better, and it's always been my philosophy, and it's something a mentor told me a long time ago. It's always better to address the elephant in the room,
Yes.
and at least everybody knows the elephant is there, and we can, you know, work around it than acting like it's not there.
Yes, exactly. Oh, that's, I didn't know that's something from your mentor. See, you have passed it down, and I will definitely pass it down to my children because it's just wonderful advice.
So,
Yeah.
speaking of your children, during your journey, you also started a family. You got married, you had kids. So tell me about how you balance, you know, being a military wife, being a mother now, having a career, the continuing education that goes along with that. And what advice would you have for listeners in that similar situation who are trying to, maybe they're newly married or have a new child? It seems like everybody in my lab right now is pregnant, so
Oh gosh, that's so funny that it was like that at Christus too. There was six of us at one time pregnant. I'm not
oh
joking.
my
It
gosh.
was, yeah, and we're a tiny lab, so it just kind of, you know, comes in waves, I guess. But yes, so advice. If I'm being honest, if there's somebody that was in my situation, it's not going to be easy when you have children. You have to become very organized, and you have to be willing to set school aside if you just can't handle the load. If you're just having, and I'll give you an example. So I was attending, I was full time at ASU State University online, and the pandemic hit. While this was going on, my husband was in Afghanistan, and it was just too much. Like, it was just this whole crazy new virus that's, you know, invading the world, and now the kids are home with me, and I have to figure out their homeschooling. And then I have the anxiety that comes with my husband being in a war zone, which he was actually, his base was attacked, and I was on FaceTime with him. You can FaceTime your spouses, like, when they're over in Afghanistan, at least where he was at. And I, you know, I saw the alarms, and I saw him in his war gear, and I could not mentally be okay for the children and go to school. So I made the decision to stop school until he came back and things settled. And so I ended up graduating, I think, like a year after I had planned. And these things happen. And I did beat myself up about it. My advice is take care of your mental health before anything. I mean, as a mother, you have to be, especially when during the pandemic, it was a very unique situation because we were on lockdown. The kids were homeschooled. I don't have family here, and I hadn't had a chance to make friends because we were kind of new to the area. I had made a few friends, but military friends, they come and go because they're always moving. So it was just very, very difficult. And I made the decision to be there for my children and set aside what I could set aside. So I dropped courses to be, you know, okay for the kids. And I mean, it worked out fine. I still graduated and I'm good. So my advice would be just, I don't want to say play it by ear, have a plan, but don't beat yourself up when the plan doesn't go according, you know, to what you pictured, because when you have a family, I mean, especially with military life, it's unpredictable. You have to learn to be able to change as things come.
That's really good advice. And I feel like you can't really have a conversation now without bringing up COVID or the pandemic. But also mental health. Mental health is a really big topic and a really relevant topic, and rightfully so. I'm glad that society is paying so much attention to how much our mental health affects so many things that we do. And
Yes.
so in terms of, like, you know, you already talked about, putting school on hold so you could focus on your family and mental health. But how was that relocating, starting a new job, your husband being in Afghanistan, all during a COVID crisis?
So I actually didn't start a new job until he came back. He's been back for about a year.
Okay.
So yeah, so that was, I put everything on hold until he came back. And once I graduated, and I was also certifying, because I wasn't certified up to this point. I was able to work as an MLT just with my military training, but California is very strict. It's one of the reasons why when I lived in Florida, I would work in Alabama, because Florida also had the certification requirements. And so I had also been studying before he went on deployment for my ASCP certification, which I got, and I was so happy. But where are we going?
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, so I did it, I think, 9 years. I think the deadline is 10 years after you do your school. So I was like right off on the cutoff. I was like, I have to do it. It's now or never. And so I finally did it. And I was planning to go back to work, but then my husband got orders and I was like, we'll just wait till you come back. And then the pandemic happened. So we just kind of pushed things back. So I did put everything on hold, especially because my kids were homeschooled for the entire year. So I was homeschooling them. And after that, I was hired at Kinvental Life Sciences. I've been there for a month and a half, so not too long. But yeah, I just adjusted as I needed, because I didn't want to overdo it. Because once I start stressing, it kind of affects the whole family, the whole family's dynamic. So I was just like, you know what, I'll just wait until everything settles. And settled, and now I'm finally back at work. This is the longest I've gone without being a full-time worker. I think it's 3 years. I've been a stay-at-home mother, and I'm finally back in the workforce, and it is different. After being stay-at-home for 3 years, I didn't think it was going to be different. It feels very different than it did before, which could be lots of factors, you know, different state, different kinds of people. But maybe it's just because I haven't been around a lot of adults the last, you know, couple years. But it's been good. I'm definitely happy being back in a laboratory. I'm very, very happy with my
One of
job.
the things that I've always liked about you, Marcy, is like your attitude and your personality. You're one of the happiest people that I've ever met in my life. One of the really most positive people. And even if you're not thinking that way, you definitely project that. And so whenever you come into a laboratory, laboratories sometimes can be really stressful environments, especially when you're working in certain areas like blood bank. And so to just have that positivity and that mindset of, yes, guys, we can do this, we're a team, is always refreshing, when somebody like you walks into a laboratory. So being that you are in a new position, I want to ask, and being that you do have that type of attitude just naturally about yourself, what advice would you have for listeners to be successful in a new job or on a new team or in a new lab because you've been in that position so many times?
So for somebody new that's coming into a laboratory, like just advice in
Yeah,
general,
like for
just.
just a new employee who is on a new team, maybe they transition to a different section or department of their laboratory and they're with a new team, or they've started a new job and maybe they're in a new lab altogether.
I guess the best advice I would have to give for a brand new person is to be a great, especially at the beginning. This is so important at the beginning. Be a great helper. And be a great listener. Be a very good listener. Even if you've worked, and I've had to, you know, pull myself back a little bit, especially once you start getting so much experience, you want to just kind of do what you've done. And every lab does things a little bit differently. So just kind of stand by and look for ways to help and listen so you can learn about the lab that you're in. And that will help you kind of smoothly transition into a new lab. Just to be helpful and be, you know, an attentive listener. So, I mean, can't go wrong with those two things, I think.
I think the laboratory is a really small world, because even you and I, like you said, we worked together many years ago in your career, almost 10 years, probably 10 years ago in your career, or over that. And we still were able to kind of reconnect from the relationship that we cultivated all those years ago. So talk to me about why you personally think it's important not to burn bridges.
So, I have seen this firsthand, and I'll never, the first time I heard this about the laboratory being a small world is when I was in San Antonio. One of my trainers, Julie Pinsinski, which I'm still friends with, all these years later, she told us, "I want you to be very careful out there when you're like job hunting." Right before we graduated, she said, "Do not burn your bridges because the lab is a small world." And I just, I took it with a grain of salt. I wasn't really, I'd never seen it work in real time, but I did eventually. So I think about 5 or 6 years into my career, I had a supervisor, and he was a very smart man, and he was very educated. But he didn't have the greatest like relationship with his coworkers. And I remember being at University Hospital, which I worked with Andrew again, which is great. Thank you. That was such a great experience at University Hospital. But I saw him there, and I remember him. I guess he was looking for a blood bank job. They had some kind of education, and so I remember that the supervisor was kind of talking, and I guess like his reputation like followed him, and so people were hesitant to offer him a position. Not because of his education and not because of how intelligent he was, because he had that, but because of how he got along with other people. And so I'm not sure if he got hired there or not, but I never saw him. So I don't think he got that job. And again, in Methodist, because I was part-time at Methodist Hospital at the time, and my boss actually approached me and she asked me if I knew him. And you know me, like, I don't want to say anything to prevent a person from progressing in their professional career, but I was just kind of like, well, he's very smart, and I kind of said what I'm saying now. He's very smart and he's very educated. But then she looked hesitant, and I'm like, she kind of mentioned that she's getting similar information that he's difficult to get along with, and he missed out on that job opportunity too. Now, this gentleman had the education and he had the experience. And he was very smart. He was very capable. But because of the way he was with other people, he lost these great opportunities. And I think that just it kind of proved what my instructor warned us about. Like it would make it very difficult. And these are very major hospital systems in San Antonio. So, but still, like we came across this small pool of laboratory people that we knew. And you just have to be careful. It's very much the relationships that you cultivate in the professional workforce that kind of it's a driving force. Like the connections, they have to be there. They do.
Yeah, I think as good as we can all look on paper, everybody has connections, and so I do get calls similar to that all the time about working with people, and just like you, I never want to prevent a person from moving forward. And then you also never know how people have changed in life also, but
Exactly.
really, you always want to leave people with a great lasting impression of you. And the advice I always give technologists when it comes to this topic is make people miss you when you're gone. So when you're there, you want them to feel like that you've gained something. But if you, God forbid, ever leave that laboratory for a better opportunity or because of life, you want them to miss you when you're gone. Like you want when you
Yeah.
turn in your resignation, you want people to panic a little bit and say, "Oh my God, what are we gonna do without you? You're our best tech." You want that feeling. Because that means that you've contributed something, that you've offered something, and when you leave, they feel like they're going to miss something. They're going to have to really work to replace that. And that's just part of not just being there as a technical addition, but also as a team addition. And so that's the advice I would give to anybody listening. Make them miss you if you leave.
That is good advice.
You don't want people to have a party when you turn in your 2 weeks notice. Like, yeah, that is not the reaction you want.
No, not at all.
So when you look
Happy.
back, we've talked a lot about your career, is particularly in hindsight, but when you look back, maybe even at yourself, you know, coming into one of your first jobs, and you think, I wish I would have known X, Y, or Z. What career advice would you have given to your younger self?
I wish I would have seen the value in the career field at the time. I was so single-minded on one profession, one career, you know, being an English teacher, being in the literary world. I never even gave the thought of doing lab for, you know, professionally for the, you know, course of my professional life. I never gave it a thought. I never gave it any attention, not serious attention. I was like, I basically told myself I can do this until I get to where, like, I think I should be. And I feel like I really, I didn't waste my time because I did get my degree, but I feel like if I had a clearer idea and had just given the laboratory world a little bit more interest, I would have progressed a little faster than I have. Because not that there's anything wrong with progressing, you know, in your 30s, but I feel like all the signs were there. I enjoyed my job. I don't know why I didn't give my chance, myself a chance to pursue it. And I have one theory. I'm not good at math. And so I dreaded taking math courses, and I was afraid that I would fail the chemistry courses that, you know, I'd have to eventually take to pursue an MT and or a CLS. And it scared me. And I wanted to stick with my comfort zone because I knew I was a good writer. I knew I was good at literary interpretation. So don't stay in your comfort zone. Like, try to expand yourself. If, you know, just don't be single-minded about pursuing one thing. If there, you might miss other opportunities, like I, you know, which I didn't miss being a medical laboratory technician, but I missed the progression that I could have done if I had recognized that it's something I actually enjoy, and have some faith in myself, and you can get through those chemistry courses and those math courses. Like, you can do these things. So yeah, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, there's also ways, and, you know, there's Clinical Laboratory Manager magazine, and, you know, the Dark Report, Dark Daily Report, and all these other magazines that, you know, laboratory people write and edit for. So if you still got that passion, then there's so many laboratory articles to write for and maybe edit for and do freelance work on the side for. So that's always an option also.
Yeah, that might be interesting. I'm always reading the articles on LinkedIn, the lab. They're so interesting. I love it. So yeah, I mean, there you go. It's the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. And as we wrap up the conversation, I love to also ask guests what advice they would leave the listeners with that they can use in their professional lives. So if you use any apps or any books that you love to read, or anything that you like to listen to, or websites that you frequent, what advice would you leave for the listeners as we wrap up?
I love YouTube because you could find a million videos. And what I do when I drive is I'll find videos on, like, I listen to the blood bank guy. I used to listen to his videos all the time. Have you heard of him? There's this YouTube channel, and he's called the blood bank guy, and he has just dozens and dozens of videos. He's been doing it for years about, like, everything, the basic stuff to, like, complex blood bank testing. And I used to listen to them for fun because it was just, like, so interesting, and he would break it down really easily. Or I was listening to, like, stem cell when I first got hired at Kimbanta Life Sciences, because I didn't know a lot about the world. So I was just kind of about the world of, like, stem cell or cell isolation. Mm-hmm. So I was just using YouTube videos, and I listened to them on my drive or when I'm getting ready. So, I mean, it's just a free plethora of knowledge that everyone has access to. So I would definitely recommend that, especially if you're too busy to read, because I used to read a lot, but now I'm kind of busy. So I usually just listen to podcasts or YouTube videos. Yeah. So take advantage of that.
I'm gonna have to check those out. And also, you mentioned, you know, read the articles on LinkedIn. So can you tell the listeners how they can reach out to you? Maybe if a listener has heard you say something that piqued their interest and they want to reach out to you and connect with you further, how can people stay in touch with you?
Definitely on LinkedIn. So I'm under Marcy Dufresne, and I'm always looking for new connections. And I mean, I love talking about the lab world. So if anybody wants to, especially I love blood banking. So if anybody wants to just, you know, or just talk about lab in general, like the culture or their career progression or advice, you can find me on LinkedIn, to Marcy Dufresne. Yes.
Well, thank you, Marcy. Thank you for coming on the
show. You're very welcome. It was so nice to talk to you again.
It was great to talk to you too. I hope the listeners enjoyed this conversation with myself and Marcy Dufresne, really going over her life and her journey and her progress through the unconventional and untraditional route of getting into laboratory profession. We've talked about it on the podcast a couple of times that, you know, there are just very few people who go into the laboratory profession directly. Most of us stumble our way into this profession, but once we're in, we're kind of embedded into, you know, what we do and how it helps the patients and the physicians and the doctors that we serve. And so I thank you for coming forward, because this was a really interesting talk and a really great time to catch up with you again. As an old colleague from many years ago. If you like what you heard today and you want to hear more of our episodes, please subscribe to our channel on directimpactbroadcasting.com. You can catch the Elaborate Topics podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your favorite podcast platform. Do me a favor and share this podcast with all of your laboratory friends and colleagues and MLT, MLS students so that they can hear this wonderful information. Follow me on all of my social media. It's Stephanie Y. Whitehead. I make it very easy to find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, wherever you search for people and connect with people. And until next time, have a wonderful day.
Yep. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.